Sharon Robinson is with us. I wanted to ask you about your mom, and how is she, and what is she up to?
She's up to, you know, just strong and wonderful as ever. Still very connected to the Jackie Robinson Foundation. That is her legacy and, you know, her baby, and she's very devoted and is in the office twice a day. Sort of nothing stops her. Still doing her 5 and 10 year plans.
I love it. No, it's great. One of the thrills of my life was getting to interview her and telling me stories about your dad and how she wouldn't let anger in the house. She had to hit a bucket of golf balls before he would come in. But it was a lovely story. Did you like the movie 42?
Yes, we loved the movie. We thought it was strong, forceful, and what I love about it is everywhere I go into these schools, kids have seen the movie and loved it, and you know, that we can sort of talk about Jackie Robinson on a whole different level because they have a greater understanding of him and the times.
You know, I was asked to speak before the movie's coming from Brooklyn, and you know, and they asked me to do that a few times, and I was the kid in Brooklyn that they described on the street corner,
yes,
doing his ratting stance, and that. But that's the way he touched everyone in those days. He really was very charismatic, and he represented what you wanted a baseball player to be. Even as a kid, we realized it.
Yeah, and you know, back then, also the players lived right in the community that they played ball in, and so we have lots of stories of kids that got to know him because he was a neighbor.
Right. Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you.
That is Sharon Robinson. What a pleasure here.
Boy, nice to have you back with us. That was wonderful with Sharon Robinson. It's always a thrill for me to see her or Rachel Robinson. Boy, it's great. I love it. Bill, Jackie Robinson was commemorated and remembered on Thursday, a very moving ceremony in many, many parks. What were your thoughts about it, about Jackie, the man and the baseball player?
Well, I think first and foremost, he opened a lot of our eyes back then to what we're really realizing today's world is. And he was the first person that really developed the hardship that he had to go through. And once we started knowing a little bit more about him and all the things he dealt with, I think it opened up eyes across the world, not just in the United States and in the baseball world. And he did that so epically. It's just so on top of the things. And he always went on the field with a smile on his face. And he played so hard. That was the clips I always watched. He was always sliding so hard at bases and trying to get that extra, you know, enlightening of what he can play as a player. He just pushed himself all the time. And, you know, with the Hall of Fame coming in and all the different things and the aspects of you talking to the Robinson family, it just shows you how much baseball has grown with him and without him. And now they're moving on without him. But I just love what they're doing with 42. I'm glad with teams that didn't play, they got to wear them yesterday. It's an honor, and I'm glad they're doing it now with baseball, and especially how the world is changing today and all the different things we're dealing with.
No, well said. Many people stand on his shoulders today, which brings me to Bob Kendrick. And I wanted to play this interview. And, Bill, I did it last year, the week before the pandemic. I think it was just the end of February, early March when I did it. But the reason that he's the president of the Negro League Museum, and why I wanted to bring it to you today is that he describes exactly, Bill, what you talked about, and that is how Jackie Robinson became the baseball player. Yeah. We all think 1947, Jackie Robinson invented baseball, and he just his way they played the game they'd never seen before. No, not exactly. The Negro Leagues had been around and organized since 1920, and Jackie came up with those players as his legacy. And Bob Kendrick explains those players, and I thought it's a very, very important part of who Jackie is and who Jackie became later on as a player in the National League. So this is my interview with Bob Kendrick. We'll come back afterwards and talk a little bit more about it. But I wanted to bring this to you because I think it really shows the essence of Jackie Robinson and how he became the baseball player he was. So Bob Kendrick joins us. Bob, how are you?
Hi, Marty. I'm doing great, man. It's great to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm very happy to have you. This is a very special year, 2020. It's the 100th anniversary of the Negro Leagues. You have a lot going on, I know, at the museum about it. There are a couple of players I want to talk to you about, but bring us up to date on sort of the celebration and your thoughts about it.
Yeah, you're right. It is an absolutely important year, one of the most important years for the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. in our 30-year history. We actually turned 30 this year as well. But to be able to commemorate and celebrate the 100th anniversary of the birth of those Negro Leagues formed right here in Kansas City. As a matter of fact, Marty, just around the corner from where we operate, the old Paseo YMCA, is where the Negro Leagues were signed into existence on February 13, 1920, by Andrew Rube Foster. And so on that same historic date, last month, we had the Commissioner of Major League Baseball, Xavier James, who's the Chief Operating Officer for the Major League Baseball Player Association, and a host of other dignitaries join us as we went back into that very building to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the birth of the Negro Leagues. And as you well know, on that historic date, Major League Baseball and Major League Baseball's Players Association bequeathed a $1 million gift to the Negro Leagues Museum to support the work that we're doing to keep the legacy of the Negro Leagues alive and thus jumpstart this full year-long 100th anniversary celebration.
Wow, fabulous, fabulous. Bob Kendrick with us, the president of the Negro League Baseball Museum. You know, I love history, and I love, and I always say everything that happened in this country you could find on a baseball diamond, whether it was during the wars, social changes, the Depression, you name it, labor unions, it showed up on a baseball field, and the Negro Leagues sort of fit into that as well. But a lot of people don't know about Rube Foster. And what a unique man he was to start the Negro National League, if I'm not mistaken,
at that time.
And that really was the beginning of sort of an organized league with statistics and everything else. Tell us more about Rube Foster so everybody understands that.
An absolute genius. Marty, he was light years ahead of his time. Rube Foster had been a great player in the early era of black baseball. And matter of fact, he had been a great pitcher and is credited with having invented what we now know to be the screwball. Back then it was called a fadeaway. And Rube perfected this pitch, so much so that the great major league manager, John McGraw, would sneak Rube Foster into his camp so that Rube Foster could teach Christy Mathewson how to throw the screwball. Christy Mathewson, as you know, threw that pitch all the way into the National Baseball Hall of Fame that he learned from Rube Foster, but Foster never got credit for it. But he's best known as this visionary, this tremendous leader. He would organize the Negro Leagues here in Kansas City. He would become president of the Negro National League. He owned the Chicago American Giants, and he managed the Chicago American Giants. And I think you can make a legitimate case that no one has had any greater impact on our sport than Rube Foster across the spectrum. And he was so innovative as a manager that he would find his ball players in the 1900s now. He would find his ball players as much as $5 if you were tagged out standing up. You were supposed to slide. He would draw a circle down the first baseline and a circle down the third baseline. And if every one of his players couldn't drop a bunt inside that circle, he would find them. Yeah, he was adamant about the style of play that became signature Negro Leagues baseball. Fast, aggressive, daring. Yeah, and that was Rube Foster, man. He was just way ahead of his time.
Wow, and a Hall of Famer, of course, eventually put in the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown as well. Bob Kendrick with us. I love Bob. I could talk to you all day long. Oscar Charleston is another name that has come up this year, and there's a story with Oscar Charleston and a tremendous. He was Ty Cobb, Babe Ruth, Tris Speaker, and all rolled into one.
All rolled into one dynamic package.
And you're talking about Willie and Willie Mays, and I haven't talked to Willie about Oscar Charleston yet. I got to talk to Willie about Oscar Charleston.
And Willie is he's Oscar was so early era that Willie he may have met him, would not have seen him play, but all the old timers in the Negro Leagues would say that Oscar Charleston was Willie Mays before we ever knew who Willie Mays was. And my friend, the late, great Buck O'Neill, says without hesitation that Oscar Charleston was the greatest baseball player he ever saw. And you're right. He drew comparisons to have the defensive abilities of Tris Speaker, the tenacity of Ty Cobb, and the bat of Babe Ruth rolled into one dynamic package. And Marty, Buck says he never saw a center fielder who could go back on a ball the way Charleston could. He had uncanny instinct, just seemed to know where that ball was coming down right off the crack of the bat. As I tell people all the time, you remember, and I know you guys do, remember the great catch that Mays makes in the World Series, a great running over-the-shoulder basket catch. You could have only made that catch in the Polo Grounds. He ran literally a country mile. And as we are, you see, and people forget, the throw was actually better than the catch. It's one of the greatest plays ever, considering the magnitude of the moment. But all the old-timers say, had that been Oscar Charleston, he'd have been waiting for that ball to come down.
I got to tell Willie that because, you know, Willie and I, we go back and forth with each other, and I've been honored to be his interviewer in some major shows about six times. And you know, I'm a former lawyer, and he always says, can't you ask better questions than that? You know, you're a lawyer. And then I say, look, you milked that catch for 60 years. You had it all the way. You know, so we go back and forth. I got to hit him with Oscar Charleston. I got to mention that to him.
But I had the pleasure of being out there in you all's neck of the woods a few years ago with Brian Murphy that brought me out. And so we're at the ballpark, and Willie's there that day. They set it up for me to get a chance to say hello to him. So we're down in the garage area standing there talking, and Brian asked him if he had ever faced Satchel Paige. And Marty, he just lit up. And you know, Willie has kind of a little bit of a high-pitched voice.
Yes.
He said, yeah, I faced Satchel. I faced Satchel when I was 17 years old. First time I faced Satchel, I got a double against him. And he's absolutely telling the truth. Satchel didn't know who he was. And he said, the next time up, Satchel threw three straight right by me. I never saw him. And he says, I'm going back to the turn and go to the dugout. Satchel steps off the mound and says, now go sit down, little boy.
That's great. That's great.
But, you know, to hear the guy who many regard as the greatest major leaguer of all time absolutely light up remembering being struck out by Satchel Paige tells you how great Satchel Paige was.
Well, that is without a doubt. I actually saw Satchel Paige pitch, believe it or not, when he was with the Miami Marlins in the late 50s.
Yes. And yes,
I remember they brought him in by helicopter one day, and they had a rocking chair in the bullpen for him. But I actually saw Satchel Paige pitch. I can't remember too much of it, but I know I was there. I remember that happening. But that's a good one for Willie. I'm going to have to hit him with that one. He talks about Piper Davis a lot. Piper was the one who really taught him how to play baseball. And Yes, that was it. Hey, Bob, a couple other things. As I say, you and I could talk all day about this stuff. Oscar Charleston, going back to him for a minute, you're also doing some things about his legacy and his memory.
Yes.
Things are happening. Tell us about it.
It was really important for us. The first game in the inaugural season of the Negro Leagues was played in Indianapolis between the Indianapolis ABCs and Rube Foster's Chicago American Giants. Well, Oscar Charleston was on that 1920 Indianapolis ABC team. And really, he, along with Bullet Rogan, were the first two superstars of the Negro Leagues. And here's Charleston, who served his country at age 15. He enlisted in the Army when he was 15 years old. Well, we recently discovered that he is buried in a nondescript grave site there in Indianapolis. And so as part of our 100th anniversary commemoration, we're going back to Indianapolis not only to commemorate the game that was played there on May 2nd, 1920, but also to put a proper headstone on the grave site of the legendary Oscar Charleston. And so that's going to be a tremendous moment, I think, for all of us, because many of these athletes played in anonymity. We don't think that they should be buried in anonymity. And
wonderful.
So it is important for us to shed light on these legendary athletes who just love the game. They love the game. They changed the game. But more importantly, they helped change this country for the better.
Very well. That's what I talk about. Everything that happened in this country showed up in a baseball field. And
yes, absolutely right.
That's very well put. Boy, interesting. Talking about one other thing I wanted to mention to you, and that is we have a play starting in San Francisco on March 5th about Toni Stone, who, of course, played in the Negro Leagues, a female for the Indianapolis Clowns in the mid-early 50s. And that play starts March 5th out here in San Francisco.
I got to see it last year off Broadway in New York when it debuted. those who are listening, if you get the opportunity, go see this incredible story. And I'm so proud of the folks that have brought her story to life. It is based on a book written by Martha Ackman called Curveball, the incredible story of Toni Stone, the first female of professional baseball. She was one of three women who played professionally in the Negro Leagues, but she was the first. She was followed by Mamie Peanut Johnson and Connie Morgan. These women were all pioneers, women who competed with and against the men in the 1950s. And her story had basically been just a footnote in baseball history. Obviously, we expound on it here at the Negro Leagues Museum, and as you can well imagine, it is eye-opening. But her story is not only a story of racism, it's also a story of sexism, but it's also, again, fueled by a passion to fulfill a dream, and that was to play baseball. And you have to remember that black women were excluded from the All-American Girls Professional League as well. And really, Mamie Johnson was the only one that attempted to try out for the All-American Girls Professional League, which, of course, was the inspiration for the hit film A League of Their Own. But Mamie Johnson was denied because of the color of her skin. Toni, of course, was at first. And you know, she took the roster place of the great Henry Aaron.
I know.
Yeah, she took the roster place of Henry Aaron, who was playing with the Clowns in 1952, had been signed away by then the Boston Braves, who, of course, would become the Milwaukee Braves and then the Atlanta Braves. But it's a fascinating story. I hope people get a chance to go check it out. It is so well performed. And so I'm so happy. She lived and died in San Francisco in her latter years. So it's only appropriate that this play would come to San Francisco.
Yeah, we had Pat McKinnon on last week talking about it. So it'll be the ACT Theater March 5th through the 29th. So I'll be back up after spring training. Just a few days left in March, but I'm absolutely going to make sure I see it. And I had Martha on the show a few years ago about the book. So I'm glad that we could talk about it. Of course, Johnny Antonelli just passed away. And Bobby Thompson and Antonelli traded for each other. Thompson then breaks his ankle as a Milwaukee Brave. And they said, how about bringing up this kid from the Sally League in Jacksonville? Maybe he could play. And you know who that was?
Yes, we do.
Number 44.
Yes, we do.
Yes, Hank Aaron. So,
and the one thing that people sometimes forget, $50. $50. Kept us from having an outfield of Henry Aaron, Willie Mays, and Monty Irvin.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, $50. Amazing. The Braves offered $50 more than the Giants. Now, don't get me wrong. $50 back then was quite a bit of money. So, and you know, Henry went with the money, and it kept us from probably seeing one of the greatest outfields in baseball history, even though Monty was past his prime. Monty's 30 years old when he gets to the major leagues.
Right.
But, man, I wish people could have seen Monty Irvin when he was 20, 21 years old. Yeah. Monty Irvin was a natural-born star, and he had star quality. You know, he could play. He had the swag. He had the good looks, everything you needed to be a star. And he could have easily been the first to break the color barrier.
Yeah, I met him. We've met Monty's numbers retired here. It's hanging at Oracle Park, number 20. It's out there. So,
oh, man, one of my favorite people in baseball ever. Just a special human being was Monty Irvin.
Yep, and took care of Willie when Willie came up. And,
yes, he did. Yes, he did.
Oh, boy, we could talk all day. Bob, a pleasure to have pleasure to have you on. Please come. We'll get you back on, talk some more, because Jeremy Beer is going to be on in a month or so about the Oscar Charleston book.
Oscar Charleston book, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Bob, well, Marty, I appreciate the opportunity. I encourage those who are listening, if you make your way to Kansas City, to please come by and experience the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. And we encourage everyone to become a member of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum and make sure that we keep the legacy of the Negro Leagues playing on long after there are no more Negro League players still alive to attest to what this league represented.
Absolutely. Bob, thank you so much. Thank you.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you guys for having me.
Boy, I love that interview. I love it. And the reason we play it is to learn. And Jackie Robinson, we talk about him today and how people stand on his shoulders in voting rights and baseball and social issues. Well, he stood on the shoulders of exactly what Bob Kendrick was describing, of Rube Foster and Oscar Charleston and people like that. Those are the shoulders that Jackie stood on that allowed him to become the man and the ball player when he broke in 1947 with the Dodgers. Bill, how did you like that?
Outstanding, Marty. I really did. I really enjoyed him. What a great interviewer. And you know what I'm loving at Major League Baseball is when they do bring baseball to Kansas City, they'll bring their teams to the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. I'm seeing more and more teams getting on a bus, getting the players, and going over there. And I think that is so important in today's life with all the active players to learn about the heritage. Like I said to Bruce, they need to know a little bit more about the history of baseball. And fantastic interview, Marty. The Satchel Paige story, I was cracking up over here with Willie Mays. That was pretty funny.
And that's how Jackie learned. And he stood on those shoulders. So he didn't just show up and become a baseball player. And like in everything in life that all of us go through, we stand on someone's shoulders to be the man, woman, or whoever we are today in the world. Well, I like that.
Yeah, that was a quality interview. Very good.
All right, we'll take a break. Bill and I will be back. Kerry will join us. We've got a little bit more to talk about on Jackie Robinson, and we'll do that right after these messages.